Forbidden Panel welcomes you to Panelcast, Forbidden Panel's weekly podcast featuring movie and comic news and reviews. And now, your hosts, AJ and Brian.
Hey, this is Brian, and welcome to the Panelcast.
And this is AJ, and you're finally getting to hear episode 77.
In this episode, we're going to be talking about some of the news that we've missed out on.
And Brian will be reviewing Necronomicon and Atomic Robo while I brag about the Inland Empire Comic Expo.
So we got all this and probably a lot more right after the break.
Hey, I'm Penn from Mostly Harmless Entertainment. Come check out all our cool videos and movies that we do at mostlyharmlessent.com. You can also find us on YouTube at YouTube/mostlyharmless. Check out all the cool stuff we're doing around Redlands and IE and California and Washington and the world stuff. Okay, bye.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Panelcast. This is our first segment, so as usual, we're going to go with the news. So, Brian, why don't you lead us off?
Okay, well, you've read the comics, and you've seen the TV show, and now get ready for the video game. Apparently, a company called Telltale Games has gotten the exclusive license to both The Walking Dead and Fables, which apparently is also in the works of becoming a TV show itself. So I don't know how I really feel about The Walking Dead becoming a video game. Telltale, if anybody out there is familiar with it, are responsible for the Monkey Island games, which are pretty awesome in their own right, but I don't really see how Walking Dead is going to translate well into a video game.
Yeah, especially since it's a real character-driven story. I mean, I don't...
Yeah.
It's just going to be like a zombie shootout, I guess, but I don't know.
Yeah, and especially since Telltale is sort of known for doing, like, episodic-type games where they release the game in parts and, you know, you play a little bit at a time. Kind of like I think they've started doing that with some of the newer Monkey Island games, and then other games out there as well have done kind of taken the same route where rather than work and complete the whole game all at once, they just work on a little bit at a time and then just release episodes of it, which I guess is fine, but I keep seeing this thing in my head of, like, The Walking Dead being this, like, point-and-click adventure game, and I don't think I like that.
I don't know. I mean, who knows? It might be good, but I think right now Walking Dead is trying to going to burn out. I mean, everything that they're doing with it, it sounds like it's just going to overkill at some point, you know? You said also that Fables?
Yeah, both they got the licenses for both of those games, so... personally, I have not started reading Fables yet, but I keep hearing about how awesome it is, so I guess I should start.
Yeah, it's pretty good, but I don't see how it's going to be make into a video game. It's pretty weird. Anyway, well, moving on. For those of you that are anxious for the Superman franchise to get rebooted up, knowing that Zack Snyder has been directing it, the latest rumors going about is that the villain is going to be Ursa. For those of you who don't remember, Ursa was in the sequel, Superman 2, of the original, and she was the right-hand chick of Zod, basically. And looks like she's being cast in there as a character, and I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, she wasn't too big of a character in the film, and I really haven't seen much of her as far as in the comics go, so I... Doesn't make sense for them to have that happen.
Are they doing this as a sequel to one of the films, or is this like a reboot, like a true reboot? Or
I don't know. But I know Alice Eve has been cast as the character. That's pretty much all I know about what they're doing with it. So I don't know. Seems a little too odd for me.
Yeah, but it's probably too early on to really tell. I mean, just who knows how much of the stuff that's coming out is actually true about the movie yet.
Right.
Well, continuing on something that we had mentioned in our last episode with the wizard going bye-bye, Wizard is finally going to be relaunching as a digital magazine, and the nice thing is that it's supposed to start its new publication February 23rd, and it's actually going to be a free magazine, and it looks like they're planning on doing it in a whole bunch of digital formats, so it's not just going to be for people that have an iPad. They're going to make it available on several different mobile devices, as well as just being able to read it on your computer. They also are mentioning that Comixology and Graphically will probably carry it as well. So Wizard's not going away. It's just changing formats. You know, it's getting with the times.
And you said it's going to be free?
Future, I guess. Yes, it is going to be free. And it's going to be a weekly release. So, you know, I'm assuming that it's probably not going to be, you know, it's going to be a much smaller publication if it's going to be weekly. The only thing that I'm worried about is I'm hoping that it doesn't end up becoming sort of just like another online blog. I'm hoping that it still keeps the digital magazine format. But, well, I guess we'll just have to wait a few days and see how it actually works out.
See, my concern with that is if it's free, that means a lot of ads are going to be in there. So my concern is like spyware possibilities and pop-ups and stuff like that, you know?
Well, it depends. I mean, if they do like a PDF format where you can actually just download the file and then read it at your leisure, like it won't really be a problem because then it'll just be like print ads.
Yeah, but they're still downloading, and that's happening.
Right. I guess, you know, it depends on if there's anything attached to the files. That's true. But, you know, I don't know. I haven't heard anything about them planning on any sort of like attachments or anything else. So I guess really we'll just have to kind of wait until I actually start distributing the magazine to see how it is. I haven't seen anything saying that there's going to be any sort of issues with ads or anything else. So I don't know how exactly they're planning on making money off of it. Maybe they're just going to make, you know, money through like their Google ad revenue or something. I don't know.
Well, moving right along. Recently, we missed out on the Super Bowl. Boo.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, me either. I was doing something much more exciting. But during the Super Bowl, we had a lot of cool commercials, and one of them being the first commercial for Captain America. Brian, have you seen the trailer for it?
I have not, actually.
Really? It doesn't look too bad, honestly. Like, it looks kind of cool. The trailer came out for it, and it met with great reviews. Everybody's, like, so excited and amped about it. And based on just the trailer alone, they've gone ahead and given the go-ahead for the sequel of Captain America. Hmm. So, just on the trailer alone. So, I'm still reserving my judgment, but from what I've seen so far, it really looks cool, and I'm kind of almost excited to see it. I'm ashamed to say.
Yeah, well, I guess I'll have to go watch the trailer then, because I've been really disappointed by the screenshots that have been coming out for it.
It looks very steampunky, like almost gutterpunk, you know? Cyberpunk, that's what I was looking for.
I'll have to take a look then and see if I hate it.
I'm sure you will, because you just hate everything.
Yeah, I do. Moving on, kind of a funny story. Apparently, Stan Lee is once again being sued by Stan Lee Media.
Sued?
Yeah. And bringing a lawsuit against him over, apparently, I guess this has been an ongoing issue for about a decade now. It's just sort of a back and forth between Stan Lee and there's a $750 million lawsuit that was brought against Stan Lee in January 2009, apparently in regard to the transferring of rights for certain characters like Spider-Man and the X-Men, the Avengers, and all of the classic Marvel characters. They're having some problems with the way that things are handled, and I've gone back and tried to like look at the history of this thing, and it's really too complex and convoluted, so I'm just talking about what's going on right now. But, yeah, apparently the Stan Lee Media was able to successfully petition to get the lawsuit to start moving forward again, only this time it's just against Stan Lee, and they're not bringing Marvel Entertainment and some of the other people that were named before into it. So, yeah, Stan Lee, I hope you got $750 million.
I bet you right now that alien symbiote that lives on top of his head is freaking out.
Well, I'm sure it can find a new host.
Eventually. Maybe it'll move on to Larry King.
Yeah, that guy's going to live forever.
I know. Moving right along. Smallville fans, I don't know why I still watch this show. I think it's just one of those addiction things. I just can't stop watching it, but I could care less.
You're just in it for the long haul
I'm
now.
Just in it. Like I'm so invested in the show that I have to see how it ends. And due to that, it's been recently reported that Michael Rosenbaum, who played Lex Luthor in the first seven seasons of Smallville, is indeed coming back for the finale. Smallville's season finale will be a two-hour series finale, and we'll deal with him basically overcoming Darkseid and all the other crap that's going on in the current storyline, and eventually donning the cape and tights. And it will see Michael Rosenbaum elevate himself into the role of Lex Luthor as we know it in comics today. So, yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know why I watch the show. I'm just, you know, it's just part of my day now. Part of my week is to watch the show. So I'm quasi excited to see what's going to happen with the series finale. I'm sure it'll suck. I'm sure.
So they're ending the whole series.
Yeah, the entire series is wrapping up. There's only three more episodes that they're filming. And it's supposed to end, I believe, in March at some point. So, yeah, you know, we'll see. Hopefully they at least wrap it up nicely. I think that's all that really matters at this point, that what everybody's excited about is just them wrapping it up nicely and being able to say goodbye to the piece of crap show that it is. And, yeah. So there you
go. Well, nothing can stay good for very long. It happens with all shows.
Yeah.
All right, well, why don't we take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with more news.
Greetings, Forbidden Panelites. This is Benjamin Gleibert, Director of Publishing for Symantec, San Diego's premium comic book publisher and home of Mythoi and the webcomic The Undergrounds. Check us out online at Symantec.com. That's Symantec.com. For now, enjoy your geeky gurus, AJ and Brian. Symantec Publishing. Find the meaning in print.
Okay, and we're back from our porn break. So, what news stories have you got for us?
Wait, I wasn't watching porn.
Oh, well, I just assumed.
Whatever, Brian. Whatever. Moving on. Stephen King's The Stand is getting a new film series. Dark Horizons reports that Stephen King's single novel epic The Stand is finally getting adapted for the big screen via Warner Brothers and CBS Films. The studios and producers will sit down with writers and directors in the coming weeks to find the right take on the material. One thing to be determined is whether to attempt the adaptation of one or multiple movies. The novel, first published in 1978 and revised in 1990, is a story of good versus evil after a virus wipes out most of the American population. The survivors end up fighting the Antichrist-like Randall Flagg. ABC produced a toned-down six-hour miniseries adaptation in 1994, while Marvel Comics has recently produced an acclaimed graphic novel adaptation. CBS has held the rights for years, but recently sought a partner to co-develop and co-produce a feature and with Warner's, winning a bidding war for the rights. King will be involved in some capacity while Mosaic and Roy Lee are producing. Now, you can't do The Stand in one movie. It's impossible.
Yeah, that was a huge fucking book. I mean, there was a lot of stuff in there.
There's a lot of parts going on in there. But again, they can't do it like the miniseries on ABC. While I enjoy watching it, it is so slow. The pacing is so painful that it's going to be hard to translate that onto the big screen. I mean, people are going to want to go in there and see shit happen right away. Now,
yeah, well, I think it depends on how they set it up. You know, I think they could probably, at least for maybe the first movie or so, kind of, you know, have like a slow build-up for all the stuff that's going on.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, the story is broken down. The book is broken down into three different parts, so they're going to have to do like at least a trilogy.
Right.
You know, the first part is Captain Chips breaking out, introduction to all the characters and stuff. The second part is you know, traveling and what have you. And the third part is the battle. So they'd have to break it down like that. But, you know, the first part might be exciting, but the second part is going to get really boring, you know?
Yeah. But I think on the plus side, there's not going to be any Molly Ringwald in it. So
well, very true, very true. So
we got that.
But, you know, M-O-O-N, that spells the stand, so we shall see what happens.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually kind of excited. I think Stephen King's movies have been getting better in recent years, so...
If Darabon directs it, it's all good.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just put that out there right
Maybe
now.
Maybe we should start, like, an internet petition for it.
Yep, because, you know, obviously he doesn't have enough to do with The Walking Dead.
Well... Going on the whole movie tangent that we've got started here, apparently the director DJ Caruso, who is responsible for films such as I Am Number 4 and Salt and Sea, is trying to get his fingers into Preacher, which I guess is making another resurgence in potential film. So, you know, I don't know. The whole TV show thing kind of fell through on that, so I don't know. Again, like with this stand, I don't know how well Preacher would translate into a film, unless maybe they were going to do a trilogy of films. I guess they could cram enough of this stuff in there.
That's going to be one fucked up movie, like, honestly. I mean, you know, and we've been going round robin on this thing for a while now. Every time the Preacher comes up about in the news, we continuously talk about it on the show. But, man, make up your mind. Do or don't do it. You know, shit or get out of the pot. Pick one, you know. Because I'm tired of all this teasing about it. If you want to do The Preacher, honestly, give it to HBO. Give it to Showtime. Give it to a Starz. Yeah. One of those channels that can show the graphic nature of this comic book in full force without having to worry about offending or concerning anybody. Plus, I mean, we've seen with, like, The Walking Dead, Spartacus, stuff like that, you know, that series do go good on these pay channels, and I think they'd be able to do it better in that forum. But you put it on film, and you're going to have to do it. That's a super hard
arm. Yeah, well, I think a big problem with the film industry in terms of being able to do certain stories right is it seems that the TV is definitely able to get away with a lot more stuff nowadays, especially with the premium stations like HBO and such. Movies have the whole, you know, ratings board that they have to deal with, and so it seems like they keep getting more and more and more conservative with their ratings in terms of just even the smallest amounts of violence and innuendo seem to get more severe R ratings. And so I really don't see Preacher being able to be made into a successful film because they'd have to cut so much crap out of it that it would be unwatchable.
Right, it'd be crap. I mean, look, they did a great job with Carnival, which has some very Preacher tones into it.
Right.
And if they can pull that off, you know, if they look at that, I'm sure they can realize that they'll pull it off on a paid channel. I mean, they tried to do it before, and it fell down. But try again. With all the success that they're having with the series, with series now on paid channels, I think it would do a great job. And it's 100 issues. They could probably condense it down and turn it into, like, maybe, you know, a 4-season arc or something. But they got to try something.
And as far as Garth Ennis stories go, it's probably one of the most filmable, too.
Well, not really. I mean, like, I've been trying to get you to watch the Battlefield series for a long time, but...
Yeah, I know. I'll read the Battlefield do it eventually.
Series. But that is, you know, an amazing series, in my opinion. But as it is, they're already looking at The Boys to try and make that into a TV series.
Oh. And yeah, I don't know if I want to see that.
If The Boys,
although maybe if they tone down some of the, you know, the sexual crap that goes on in there, maybe it'll actually be a more decent story.
Well, the problem I have is that if The Boys gets made into a movie or any type of, you know, anything other than a comic book before The Preacher, I think we're all going to get pissed because The Preacher is one of those things where we've been wanting to see for a long time.
Right. But, you know, it's the film industry. They do whatever they fucking want.
Moving on in with mistakes that the film world was making. It looks like the Hollywood adaptation of Akira is finally coming to play, and James Franco is being sought in the role of Kaneda. Really? I don't see James Franco as Kaneda. I just don't see it. I know he did a great job with 127 hours, and I'll give him that, but...
I don't see just an American version of this film being made, period.
Akira is just like The Preacher. You've already got a set, hardcore base of fans wanting to see this come to fruition. And so you have to really be careful with the lines that you cross when you're coming across these two things. If Akira is not made properly or not done right, it's just going to tank, period.
I'm not saying anything against James Franco, necessarily, because I think he's good in certain other roles, but... Yeah, I won't see this. But I don't see Akira being made as an American film, period. I don't see it.
Moving on.
Yeah. Well, here's an interesting story. For anybody out there that knows, I was trying out... when Comic-Con tickets went on sale, they pretty much sold out, I think, within a few days. Like, it just...
It sold out in hours.
Yeah. It was insane at just how fast. Well, they ended up... Like, the site crashed almost 30 minutes into the sale, and it took them a while to get it back up. But... Yeah, so, I mean, Comic-Con went fast. So, if you didn't get your Comic-Con tickets right when it opened, then you're pretty much assed out. However, there is another Comic-Con that is opening up. If you have tickets to India, India is having their first annual Comic-Con. So, anybody out there, is probably actually might be cheaper to... buy tickets to India to go to the Indian Comic Con than it would be to buy Comic Con tickets off of a scalper.
Yeah. That whole fiasco was ridiculous, and I felt for everybody trying to get in there to get their tickets. I mean, we're pros, so our shit has been confirmed for months, and you know, and we go free. Not meaning to brag or anything. But at the same time, you know, you want to be able to go there with your friends. You want to be able to go there and have fun with groups of people that you know. And the ticketing system, the way that it was handled this year, was just complete crap. It cut off a lot of friends that I know, a lot of people that I know, which are hardcore, long-time goers that can't attend. I mean, it's bad enough right now as it is that we can't even get a booth at Comic-Con for the next 5 years. That sucks enough. But now, when I do go to Comic-Con this year, I can't even go with my friends. So
it's gotten pretty bad. It's just... In everything, it's like, I mean, the fact that even their website is getting overcrowded is kind of saying something about the way that Comic-Con is going, which I almost kind of see it just sort of collapsing in on itself from, it's just becoming too big.
Right. And in direct response to that, they've started another comic book convention in L.A. called Kamikaze, which is looking, they're trying to be what Comic-Con would have been if it moved to L.A., So, I don't know. We'll see how that goes. I mean, thanks to San Diego Comic-Con being as overcrowded as it is, little conventions are blossoming like crazy. One of the things I'll go into later on in the show is the Inland Empire Comic Expo and how wonderful it did. Just because of the fact that it happened 2 days after the Comic-Con fiasco, everybody was just happy to go to a convention, period. So... Keep going, San Diego Comic-Con, because you're making us little Comic-Cons come up in aces,
Yeah. So, if you have the chance to make it to New Delhi in India this weekend, then why don't you try going to the first annual Indian Comic-Con?
Yeah, it might be kind of cool. Now, especially if you're watching Outsourced, you already know what's going on there. Anyway, in other news, Spider-Man... The Spider-Man film that is coming out, not the completely debacled and tanked Spider-Man play that Brian is starring in.
Yeah. whatever.
The new film has released a shot of Andrew Garfield in costume, as well as announced the title of the film, which will be The Amazing Spider-Man. Now, I don't know about everybody else. I know, like, some people are, like, cranky about it or what have you.
Yeah.
But me, personally, the suit looks awesome.
Yeah, I really like it. Yeah. Like, I've heard some people go, ugh, well, I don't know how I feel about the suit.
You know what?
But at least he's got mechanical shooters.
Yeah, you know what? If you've ever read Spider-Man, if you've been a fan of Spider-Man for years, you realize that motherfucker changes costumes all the goddamn time.
Right.
He adds a little new...
He's had, like...
Every time there's a new artist, every time there's a new artist, is a new costume. Mm-hmm. You know? Little slight variations in the original costume, what have you. So this costume looks awesome, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's recognizable as Spider-Man. It's not like they changed it so bad that you don't even know what it was. You know, it wasn't like the ridiculous outfits that they had in the first X-Men movie.
Right.
They're just like... Whatever that was.
They're biker gang, you know? At this point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is... a Spider-Man costume. You can look at the just a picture and you know who that character is. So, you know what, nerds? Shut up.
In case anybody has been like stupid or just completely gone for the last 20 years, you're not going to get perfection when it comes to a movie.
Right.
And I know that's completely polar opposite of what we've been talking about for the past few news bits, but you got to understand, there's going to be some variations and some slight differences in story and costume or what have you when it comes to film adaptations of your favorite comic books. It's bound to happen. All you have to really look forward to is attitude and the story. If the story is actually good, if the character, if the actor portraying the character actually does a decent job of it, if the whole film itself is believable, you know,
right.
Nothing is ever going to be verbatim, and that's bound to happen. Like, I seriously doubt we're going to see Jesse's cousins fucking a fish in any Preacher adaptation that we see. It's just not going to happen, you know? But, you know, I understand.
You know,
that.
I think I'd be okay without the fish fucking,
right,
honestly.
Right, we're not going to see that. And that's okay, because we can accept that that is one of those things that will not be translated into the medium. And in Spider-Man, every costume is going to be different. The actors are going to be different. Just as long as they nail the important parts, then... that's all that matters, in my opinion. So, done with my rant. We'll go ahead and take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll have a couple more news stories before we hit the meaty parts of the show.
Hi, this is Justin White with Necrosapien Press. Why don't you come down and check out the website at necrosapien.net. You can see all my latest artwork and projects, and we'll have a store up soon where you can buy prints of my art. Thanks.
In times like this, the great heaven knows.
And we're back yet again.
Brian has had too much cock in his mouth, apparently.
Alright, let's start over. And we're back yet again. Okay, AJ, so what stories have you got?
First off, flashing news, Brian can't talk anymore. I think that's the most important story that we need to announce. RoboCop... Actually, let me rephrase that. Detroit is erecting a new RoboCop statue.
I heard that that was actually not happening.
Well, as of February 17th, which is yesterday, the online Kickstarter.com campaign to raise funds to raise up the RoboCop statue has worked. $50,000 has been raised to build a big metal statue of RoboCop in Detroit.
Jesus, the internet wants what it wants, I guess.
Exactly. Only last week, the city's mayor, Dave Bing, declined a tweeted idea to build the statue after he solicited citizens online for ideas on how to revitalize the city. Yet the idea generated such a response that a campaign has begun to collect donations to cast a weatherized 8-foot-tall iron statue. A big donation from Pete Hotlett at Omni Consumer Productions Corporation, along with 1,700 other people who pledged cash, has resulted in enough finances being raised in just a week. Where the statue will be set up is not sure yet, but as soon as more details come out, we will let you guys know. That's freaking awesome!
Yeah, I wonder if Peter Weller's going to get any of that money.
I doubt it. His likeness was signed over long ago. What else you got, Brian?
Well, just kind of a... I was going to say it's a depressing story, but it's not really, because I don't care that much. Borders is filing for bankruptcy and are in the process of closing down about 200 stores. I'm sure this is probably being mentioned in some other news. People probably caught it on, like, you know, daily news or something like that. But, yeah, apparently they've been having so many problems with actually paying back the distributors that a lot of distributors have not even bothered to ship to them anymore. Diamond specifically is one that just – they stopped shipping anything to Borders. So I'm not going to be getting any new comics, and chances are they're probably not going to be getting a lot of new books from other places. They're just going to liquidate everything, I guess.
Which is a little sad. I mean, at one point in time, Borders was indeed a mainstay, a big powerhouse as far as where to purchase books from and such.
Right.
But, you know, recently, every time I go to a Borders, I'm not exactly seeing anything I'm too excited about. They've become tiny little shit stores, basically.
Well, I think a lot of the problem with Borders is that they try to expand too quickly to compete with Barnes & Noble, and they ended up blowing a whole bunch of money on just opening a whole bunch of little outlet bookstores and things all over the place, and they're not really trying anything different, you know? I mean, a lot of the mom-and-pop stores survive because they fill a particular niche, and honestly, the niche that Borders fills is served by Barnes & Noble, and really, it's done better. I mean, Barnes & Noble has pretty much anything
right
that you would need. And it just seems like they tried too hard to compete with Barnes & Noble and ended up spending way too much money. Because from what I understand, the stories I've been reading, they're about $1.29 billion in debt.
Wow.
That's a lot. Like, that's a lot of money to spend. So, you know, it's I've been to Borders a few times, but honestly, I never really cared for them one way or the other. It wasn't like something where I just, you know, I don't know. It doesn't really bother me that much that they're going out of business.
Yeah, it's, you know, I could care less one way or another. I feel bad for the people that are losing their jobs and what have you.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it sucks, especially in this economy, that, you know, people are going to be losing jobs. But in terms of the company itself, you know, okay.
Yeah.
It happens.
It happens. Sorry, guys. Well, moving on. Big news in comic stuff. In case you guys haven't noticed, I guess we should have thrown this out for the newcomers. Brian covers a lot of more of the comic book aspect, while I cover more of the comic books and film aspect type thing. So, yeah. It's not that I don't like comic books. I love them, but we just balance out that way. So, moving forward in comic book stuff on TV, the big news this week is that Adrian Pilecki has been cast as Wonder Woman. Adrian Pilecki is set to slip into the red and blue corset for the title role in the new TV series based on the Wonder Woman comic. We've reported many times on a few of the past panel casts how unexcited we are about this.
Yeah.
I mean, initially, like, you know, they shopped it around, it got passed over, then miraculously it got picked up, and, you know, there's just been a lot of news about it, so... David E. Kelley has scripted the pilot and will executive produce the series about Diana Prince, a successful Los Angeles corporate executive and modern woman trying to balance all the elements of her extraordinary life with her job moonlighting as a vigilante crime fighter. Jeffrey Reiner, who directs the event, will direct the pilot, while Bill D'Elia from Boston Legal and The Practice will also produce with Kelley. Now, yeah. I mean, Adrian Pilecki...
It doesn't sound like Wonder Woman.
Yeah, not at all. And Adrian Pilecki, I mean, she's pretty hot. She looks like she'll pull the job off. She did a great job on Friday Night Lights and some of the other films I've seen her in.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen pictures of her, and she's got the look for Wonder Woman.
She does. So. I mean, she would have to dye her hair. If they don't dye her hair, then it'd be kind of awkward. But we'll see if they make her dye her hair. But at the same time, you know, well... I don't know. I think she might do a good job. Now, storyline-wise, I think that's just...
Yeah, that sounds really awful. It doesn't sound anything like Wonder Woman at all.
But at the
and that's exactly
time,
what I was afraid of.
At the same time, in my opinion, they would have had three avenues in which they would have had to look at what to do with it. The first being, you know, the executive Modern Woman that they're trying to pull off. The second being Diana Prince in high school, which, yeah, would have been horrible.
Yeah.
And the third being showing her on Amazonian Island, which at that point turns into, like, Hercules or fucking Xena, you know? And which is not the path I think they want to take. I think they're trying to make this an actual serious show. And I don't know. We're going to have to see what happens with it, but I'm not too thrilled one way or another. I mean, good job. Congratulations, Adrian. But who knows how long you'll have that job for.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But I'm actually going to complain about something else here.
Blue water.
Yeah, blue water. How'd you guess?
I don't know. It's something new.
Apparently Blue Water is coming out with another one of their notorious fame comics, this time about such lackluster topic as Danica Patrick, who people may or may not know as some chick who drives cars for a living or something like that.
Yeah, she, GoDaddy.
I don't know. I don't care. The thing that I think is interesting is that they still somehow manage to keep... People are buying these comics. Because they keep making them. They wouldn't keep making them if people weren't buying them. So somebody is buying these comics, and I'm trying to figure this out. And I can't. Because, honestly, even if you liked sports, and I really don't even think that NASCAR can be considered a sport personally, but even if you like sports, why? Or even if you're interested in politics, or you're interested in music, or whatever, why would you want to read a comic book biography of somebody?
Because she's hot.
I guess.
That's her whole deal, is that she is a hot chick that races, that drives a race car. She's the ultimate tomboy. So,
I mean, that's like her claim to fame, is that she's a woman in NASCAR.
Right.
And it's like, ooh. But so it's almost like a shock factor value. Like, I mean, aside from that, I mean, I don't know anything about NASCAR, so I don't know how well she actually drives or anything like that. I don't know if she's wins a lot or what, but I don't understand the appeal of wanting to have, for one, an authorized biography, and two, a biography comic. Like, it does not seem like a format that people would spend money on.
Right.
So, I don't know, but somebody's keeping Blue Water afloat.
You know what? Just because it doesn't make sense to us doesn't mean it doesn't make sense to other people.
No,
there's a lot of things out there right now that we don't completely understand. You know, like a Jersey Shore. How the hell is Jersey Shore?
Yeah, Jersey Shore and Twilight. So, I mean, there's people out there that are doing
right.
it, but it just
there's an audience for almost every piece of crap that's out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there is, but I just my personal incredulity doesn't really change anything, but it just it baffles me.
Yeah.
Completely. I don't get it.
You're still allowed your opinion. It's okay. Today.
My opinion should be the only opinion, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, that's only your opinion, and obviously you're wrong in that. So, if you have nothing else, if you're done with your rant.
Yeah, I think as soon as I get to a Blue Water story, it's pretty apparent that I'm done. I'm spent.
Awesome. Then we'll go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get into Brian talking a lot more about stuff, because we just don't get tired of his voice. Be right back.
Hey, this is Cricket. I'm new to Forbidden Panel, and I'm also new to the whole world of geek. And I'm really excited to get your suggestions on new comic books and movies, things that are old, new, because I really don't know anything about any of it. So if you have any suggestions, just send them to me at cricket@forbiddenpanel.com. That's cricket@forbiddenpanel.com, and I'll see you online.
And welcome back to the show, Brian!
Yeah?
Apparently you learned how to read.
Yeah.
And what have you, what knowledge...
Oh, was I supposed to talk about the stuff that I read?
No,
oh.
No, we just like hear you sound like a dumbass.
Oh, well that happens every issue.
Yeah,
so.
Every episode?
Got comics on the mind, so I'm going to go with issues.
Okay, because you have a lot of issues.
Yeah, I do. The first thing I was going to talk about was this comic I heard about, and I thought it sounded interesting, so I went and read the first issue and liked it okay. Thought it was going somewhere. And the second issue just completely killed it for me. If anybody out there hasn't read my blog post on it, then they don't know. But that series is Alan Moore's Neonomicon, and oh wow. Boy, was I disappointed. It was pretty bad. I was expecting a lot, honestly. I think a part of the problem is that I was kind of expecting something from Alan Moore, considering how much I like a lot of his other comics.
Oh, see, that's your bad, not Alan Moore's.
Well, I don't know. I suppose it is. I mean, I guess it probably comes down to my opinion. There's probably people out there that are enjoying this comic, but I didn't. Like, I enjoyed the first issue, and the second issue just completely killed it for me. But Neonomicon is sort of, I guess, Alan Moore's kind of take on the whole Cthulhu mythos, the works of H.P. Lovecraft, if anybody out there is not familiar with it. And it deals with these two FBI agents who are investigating some crimes that deal with, I guess, just like a bunch of like weird murders and some sort of a drug ring and a bunch of other stuff. But they start noticing all these sort of weird kind of occult connections to this case they're working on. And there is a former FBI agent who kind of went crazy and started mutilating bodies. So it started off really interesting. Like, the pacing was good and the story was developing kind of a, you know, interesting, you know, I don't want to keep saying interesting, but the comic definitely did hold something for me. Like, I found the pacing and I liked there was kind of a mysterious element to it, and everything really seemed like it was going to be a good, interesting story. I mean, if anybody out there is familiar with the works of H.P. Lovecraft, he really was not a terrific writer. Even considering the 1920s when he was writing, like, he wrote really simply, but his stories were good because of the way that he kind of put a lot of information into, a lot of detail into the world and his writing, and he really had a lot of consistency, but he also used a technique of really not over-describing situations in his horror stories. So
he didn't Stephen King it.
Right, right. So, I mean, he wasn't a fantastic writer, but he left things to your imagination in just the right way so that you really kind of freaked yourself out when you're reading these stories. And that's really what I kind of expect whenever I read somebody's sort of homage to the whole Cthulhu mythos. Like, I really kind of expect that to remain an element. I don't like it when they show too much, but I think that's how it is in horror in general. I generally don't like it when they show too much, and Stephen King does do that, I'll admit. But with this particular book, you know, the first book, the pacing went along just fine, and it seemed like it was going great. Then I got to the second issue, and all of a sudden, I'm, like, seeing all this horrible shit happening, and just, like, all the... It's like Alan Moore just decided to pull the stopper out of, like, the dark corners of his mind and just pour everything out, and... Oh. Like, it just killed it for me. And I can't bring myself to finish the series. I mean, it's only going to be four issues. I think the fourth issue just came out.
Fourth issue?
Yeah, I can't talk. But I can't finish it. And not only that, but just the events that happened in that second comic gave me fucking horrible nightmares. Like, I had nightmares so bad after reading that to the point where I woke up and didn't want to go back to sleep because the nightmare was so bad.
Wow, when did you become such a wuss?
I don't know. But yeah, I'm sure that, I mean, the nightmare thing, obviously, that's not Alan Moore's fault. That's just my brain doing what it does. But no, I didn't enjoy the sudden turn from, you know, a creepy horror story into just this, like, violent, gore and sex-filled, pointless thing. And just, like, it just completely killed it for me.
What's it about?
Well, it's basically about these two FBI agents that are, you know, trying to track down this guy who's in charge of this sort of, like, cult/drug ring. And that's, like, in the process of trying to track this guy down, they end up in just, like, this really horrible, fucked up situation. But, you know, the whole pacing of it gets killed when, like, this monster comes out and starts raping this woman and, like, all this shit starts happening and just... Ugh. Yuck. So, yeah. Whatever. I'm sure somebody out there likes it, but I sure as hell don't.
Hate mail.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, if you want to send your hate mail to me, go ahead and do it. I welcome it. But what I did enjoy reading was the latest issue of Atomic Robo.
Can Atomic Robo do anything wrong?
I don't think so. I mean, honestly, Clevenger and Wegener have consistently making one of my favorite comics. Like, every time I read it, I'm never disappointed in any of the issues of Atomic Robo. Even, like I've said before, with the particular story arc that they're on right now, The Deadly Art of Science, this story is kind of slow, but they still are giving you enough stuff, and the characters are consistent enough to the point where I honestly couldn't even care if this story just ends up being about nothing. Like, if it's just them going around doing their day-to-day whatever, I don't care. It's still entertaining to read, and I still like it. The latest issue, a little bit of spoiler here, it deals with Atomic Robo sort of having, like, a angsty teenager moment with Nikola Tesla, who's kind of his, I guess, not really surrogate father figure since he created him, but, you know, it's sort of a interesting father-son relationship thing that they have going on, and so he ends up getting in this big, huge fight with Tesla and taking off to go spend his time with Jack Taro, the crime fighter that he sort of not really met up with, but sort of forced himself upon.
That doesn't sound right.
It doesn't, but if you read the comic, it makes sense. So go out there and read it, goddammit.
You know, the last one I read was when he was interviewing people for Action Science. That was the last one I read. Is that in the same...
Well, the thing is that the story arcs don't really have any particular chronology. Like, each of the volumes that comes out, they kind of jump around in terms of the time frame that they take place in. This one, The Deadly Art of Science, actually goes back to before a lot of the events of some of the other comics. This one actually takes place, you know, when Tesla is still alive. It takes place actually before the whole World War II storylines and some other things that are happening. So this one, I think, is actually taking place in, like, the 1930s. So it kind of predates all of the other storylines. I guess it's kind of like an origin story, but not really, because there's never really been any specific chronology in any of the volumes.
Yeah, and it's one thing about the Atomic Robo that you know, there's no timeline.
Right. There is kind of, because they'll make references to certain events Like, they're pretty good at keeping things consistent. It's just the story is not getting told in a linear fashion. You're just getting bits and pieces. So sometimes you'll get an earlier story, sometimes you'll get a later story. You know, last volume was mostly set in the modern time, and now they're going back to the 1930s. But yeah, so it doesn't really have anything to do with any of the other storylines that have come out so far. But you know what? I don't care. Atomic Robo can do no wrong.
There you go. Now, I love this. I love the entire volumes of Atomic Robo books that have come out. I mean, they've never, ever disappointed me. So I'm excited to read the new series.
Yeah, you really should. It's fun. Although, I guess maybe we can wait until the whole arc comes out, since I know you hate waiting for comics, but I like reading them as soon as they come out.
Well, alrighty then. You got anything else to talk about?
That's all I read. After reading Neonomicon, it kind of just put me off my game.
Brian Kreisch, wuss. It's okay, Brian, I still love you.
Yeah.
Well, alright, if you're done, we'll quit, take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
This is Brian of the Forbidden Panel Podcast. I just want to invite you to listen to my companion podcast, The Geek Girls, featuring one-on-one interviews with geeky ladies. Look for Geek Girls on ForbiddenPanel.com. And we're back. Okay, and since I didn't end up getting to attend, AJ, I am going to start asking you some questions about the Inland Empire comic show.
Yay!
So, first of all, I want to know, how did it go?
It was freaking phenomenal. I cannot, first and foremost, before I go anywhere into this, I have to say thank you to everybody that not only attended, but to all the vendors that were there as well. We had an amazing turnout considering it was on a Super Bowl Sunday. For those that don't know, where the hell have you been? Because we've been blasting this thing all over the internet since we first decided to do it. The Alien Empire Comic Expo was just a little short convention that we had, a little small convention that we had at the Fox Theater in Redlands, California, filled with a lot of great and wonderful people that just are tired of having to do the San Diego Comic-Con thing. Of just, you know, got burnt out on that being the only show in town. So
right.
We here at Forbidden Panel decided to run our own show. And caught up a lot of, and made it a good equal mix of everybody, not just vendors, but artists and cosplayers and tabletop gaming and stuff like that. So, and apparently we did a great job. There was articles about it in the Sun newspaper, in the Redlands Daily Facts, in the Alien Empire Weekly, all over the web. If you Google us, we hog up the first 13 pages of Google. It just went phenomenal, and I can't be more excited and proud about how great it went.
Yeah, it seems like there was quite a huge response for it.
Yeah, it was, like I said, Dude, beaming with pride is one way of saying it.
Yeah.
Which would have only been, I think the show would have been ruined if you had showed up.
Thanks. Well, now I'm glad I didn't attend.
As am I. I mean, you could have killed the whole thing. It would have just been crap.
Yeah.
Because, you know, every time you smile, it, like a little child dies somewhere. Like,
oh, I don't smile that often, so exactly. It shouldn't be that much of a problem.
An angel loses its wings whenever you smile. So, yeah. But no, it went great. Yeah, it was awesome.
Well, how was your personal experience there? I mean, in terms of, like, the things that you did there, how did that go?
Honestly, Honestly, for me, I had the most stressed out day in the world. As the guy running the event and, you know, the guy running Forbidden Panel for the most part, I was all over the place. Our day started at 5:30 a.m., where me and the guys just rolled up.
Ugh.
And we had to clear up the space. We had to set up all the tables and just get everything prepped. And it just went from there. It was just nonstop me running around, making sure everything was working, making sure everything was good, making sure everybody was taken care of, you know. And it's there, one thing that I've done, like, I've been going to conventions almost all my life. And, you know, and Brian has been tagging along with me every now and then. But I, in that time, I'm very good at observing and seeing things that I would change, seeing things that I enjoyed, seeing things that other people enjoyed and what have you. And so I
right.
did my best to try and incorporate all those things that we do like into the show and take out all those things that we don't like in the show. For example, I hate when we go and do a comic show and it's nothing but garage sale people trying to sell all their old issues and stuff, and maybe one or two artists. That's one bad thing about the Shrine Show. It's bad and good. It's bad because as an artist with a booth there, as a creator with a booth there, we get overlooked by all the people that are just there picking up cheap back issues. But as
cheap back issues and like old novels and stuff there, I notice there's a lot of that. Like people not even selling comics, they're just selling
stuff.
Knickknacks.
Yeah, it's like a swap meet. And the same with Frankincense, you know?
Uh-huh.
But as a goer, as a customer, I think those are awesome because it helps me complete all the, you know, missing issues or my collections or what have you when I go there. So unfortunately, as a creator, we get overlooked. So right. I tried to create a decent balance of that here at the show. We had Four Color Fantasies out there, and we had Bat Comics out there. And I believe we had one other group out there that were selling comics, you know. But we had a legitimate store and a couple of little, you know, people trying to sell their stuff. Just to appease the crowds in that manner. But we also, we had a lot of cosplayers. Oh my God. We had the 501st Legion. We had the Alien Empire Ghostbusters. We had the Colonial Defense Forces. We had the Star Trek Guild. We had the Lightsaber Guild. And we had the Rebel Alliance all out there in costume, as well as,
nice,
as premiering for the first time ever at a convention was the Cobra Third Night Watch. They were out there. You've heard the commercials in between, you know, our segments here. And they had a great showing for their first convention ever. First time coming out as a group in costume. They did a phenomenal job. And Tony Rebitz, the guy that's in charge of that, he did a great job helping me run the show as well. And I can't give him enough praise and accolades and adulation for all the work that he's done for us. But we had a lot of cosplayers out there. We had the Lightsaber Guild on stage doing a stage performance, you know, with Darth Vader and Jedi and Stormtroopers and everything like that. And, yeah, it was...
Yeah, I was looking at the pictures. It looks like you guys had some pretty decent costumes.
Oh, man, we had a lot of great people in costumes. The gig was, tickets were $12 at the door. If you came in costume, it was $10. Then we held costume contests throughout the day to award those people that came out in contest in costume. And the giveaways, man, we had some great giveaways. We had something... Some comic books from all the indie creators that were there. And then Martin Bright and Jose Soria from Fanboy Headquarters, they rolled up and they donated a replica Naboo helmet as well as an encyclopedia to the Marvel Universe. And this thing was still wrapped in packaging and mint condition.
Cool.
And the Inland Empire Ghostbusters gave away a proton pack, like an actual working life model proton pack.
Awesome.
And yeah, there's just so much stuff that was going away. Symantec rolled up and gave away posters and books and t-shirts. And I can't... It was an awesome experience, man. It was just phenomenal. And the fan reaction was great, too. They all... Everybody that I talked to was just having a fun time.
Well, what kind of, like, personal responses did you get, like, in terms of the people... The things that people told you?
The things that customers told me was that, thank you. I got a lot of thank yous for finally bringing something really cool to Redlands and to the Inland Empire, for them having somewhere to go and something to do, especially on a Super Bowl Sunday. We had 300 people show up on a Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Which is pretty good. I mean, considering the fact that really, for the most part, any time I've ever wanted to do some sort of like comic convention thing, you always had to go to L.A.
Right, L.A. or San Diego or something like that. So
right.
Everybody there was extremely grateful, and you know they kept telling me, like, thank you for doing this, thank you for putting this on, this is so awesome. They just had a blast. Everybody saw had a blast, you know. And what was kind of cool, you know, it kind of like bothered me a little bit, but at the same time I realized, you know what, no, I have to be appreciative of this fact. A lot of people came out in droves, and then come 3 o'clock, you know, most of them, a lot of them went home so they can go watch the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And I had expected that. And was grateful because a lot of them said, thank you for giving us something to do before the Super Bowl. You know, now we have fun and stuff, and then we're still going to go to the game.
Right.
And then a lot of people stayed after. They're like, thank you. We don't want to watch football. We want to have fun. Woo-hoo. And, you know, those people were rewarded with another costume contest. You know, and so, like I said, I got a lot of thank yous that people were just excited and happy to have something to do.
So what about the response in terms of the vendors and the people that were at the comic show alongside you?
You know, we had two booths leave early, one being the Batcave Comics. And honestly, I'm not going to invite them back because they are, had I known what their booth was about, I would not have let them into the show because they were unprofessional. They rolled up. They basically had like all these old comic books in long boxes and they set up their booth and it looked really sloppy. So come 2 o'clock, they packed up and they left because they weren't getting a lot of business. And their sloppiness and their unprofessionalism showed in their lack of business that they got. So they left early. Another vendor left early, but that's because their stuff was a little inappropriate. But at the same time, you know, they were just done with the day, and I can appreciate that. Everybody else has already asked to pre-book the next show. The next show, September 4th.
Wow.
Everybody there was had such a blast and so much fun that they've already pre-booked for the next show. So
that's awesome. It sounds like we're making some good connections.
Yeah, when the 501st walked up, the guy that runs the 501st came up and said, hey, this is a great show. Please, please, please book us right away so that we can do the next one you do because we're having fun here. So, you know, that made me feel really good. And all the other vendors, another shout-out, Dave Strickland from Idasis, the band Idasis. He was mm-hmm. the MC for the entire event, and he was up there all day promoting every single booth that was out there, every single vendor that was out there. He was doing the giveaways, the contests, the costumes, and he was just a vibrant ball of energy, and he did a wonderful job, and I have to thank him for it. He pulled me up at the end of the day, and he's like, hey, this is AJ. This is the guy that ran the whole event. And I stepped on stage, and everybody applauded. The vendors applauded. The audience applauded. Everybody was just, like, cheering. I didn't know what to do, dude. I was like...
yeah.
I was like...
You put on the spot.
I don't like the microphone. I'm going to walk away now. I was all freaking out, you know, but...
Like, let me do it through Skype.
Yeah. And I told everybody, I was like, September 4th, we're back out here again. Who wants to... If you're in, let me know. And everybody raised their hand. Everybody was back in.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, it was awesome, dude.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that I wasn't there to ruin it.
I know, so am I. Now, honestly, like you and Ryan, you guys were both missed. We wanted you guys there. We had the most Forbidden Panel people in one spot at one time, and that made me very happy as well. Though, again, like I really wanted you and Ryan to both have been there because I think, you know, I would have liked you guys to have shared in the experience.
Yeah, I definitely would have liked to have been there, and it's kind of unfortunate that I'm still such a broke-ass joke, but, you know, I'll have to try to make it to the next one or the next one or the next one, you know,
right.
Do something or at least find some other way to contribute, maybe try to do some sort of a, you know, promotions for it, or I was even thinking maybe I can try to see about starting some sort of event on the East Coast, see what I could do out here to expand our presence.
That'd be really cool. That would be really cool. As a company, as Forbidden Panel, we had a great response, man. We walked up there. Justin and I had this moment, right, where we're sitting behind our booth, and we look down, and we realize we have four issues out of ZKS. And we both look at it, and we're like, dude, we've got four issues. We've got, you know...
Right.
We're like we almost have a catalog. Like, and we both started geeking out about it. And we took 100 issues total of all, you know, from all four titles, like 20 titles, 25 titles, issues, mm-hmm. each of each title. We've got three left. We've sold everything at that show. We sold everyone. The fan reaction was amazing as far as our comic book goes. The pinup issue, that was the premiere of the pinup issue, completely gone. Completely sold out. And it was awesome because a lot of the people that contributed to the pinup issue were there with booths. So, you know, fans were able to come up, pick up the booth and pick up the book and take it to all the booths and have all the artists sign the pinups. And that was right. awesome to see, too. Like, I walked out, I gave everybody that contributed to the book a free issue. And they
were you able to get all of the artists there?
We had, like, maybe five or six of them. A lot of them were, you know, out of state or just couldn't make it. But,
right.
And a lot of them rolled up just as fans. They didn't want to, they didn't get booths there. They just rolled up to go to a Comic-Con. Like Yanglin, who just, you know, walked up. She's like, hey, how's it going? This is awesome. I was like, oh, crap, sign. You know, and we're telling everybody, hey, there's one of the artists. And then she got mobbed.
Nice.
And then afterwards, she's like, okay, next time you have a show, I want a booth. I'm like, okay, done. You know, and like Joey Labartnick rolled up, you know, just to as a fan, just to come and see a convention. Right. And it was like, hey, he did a pinup. Everybody mobbed him. You know, so it was just a great reaction to it. A lot of Justin's prints sold. A lot of stickers and magnets and everybody just, I mean, we got completely wiped out. And I can't, like, that's just awesome to me. You know, like, I can't imagine us having fans and people that, you know, want our stuff or just
interested. Yeah, it's still a really bizarre kind of feeling.
There was a website that is holding a contest on their last podcast, and their prizes were, you know, the complete ZKS package signed by AJ Herrera and Justin White. And Justin and I were like, so?
What?
Like, who cares if we sign something? Our names mean nothing, you know? And apparently they had such a great reaction to it that, you know, they're like, hey, when can we do this again? I'm like, really? Who are we? You know, I'm still in that phase where, like, you know, I don't understand what's going on. Who are you people?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a little creepy on my side, but I will never be a celebrity. I'm just the worst celebrity ever.
No. Well, I mean, you don't really get a lot of celebrities in the comic world anyways, except, you know, maybe like Stan Lee, but...
Right.
Yeah. I think in terms of, like, fame, comic book level fame is about what I could deal with.
Yeah, and that's not even... To me, that's not fame. That's just me hanging out with a bunch of people. You know, that's... But there's one thing that Forbidden Panel has always been stressed out and pointed out and has been a focus for us is that we want to expand our group, our friendship group. Like, we want more people to geek out with and hang out with and stuff. That's why we started Forbidden Panel, was to have a home for geeks to come to and just geek out and talk stuff, you know, talk about stuff and have more people to talk to. And one of the columnists that wrote an article about the show sat there and just, you know, was amazed at it. He's like, I can't believe the feeling of camaraderie I have when I walk in here. Everybody is friendly and everybody is awesome and we're all just fans. And that's just not just the attendees, but the vendors as well. And that was what I was more proud of than anything. You know, like,
just everybody got along together.
Everybody was having fun. Like, everybody, I turned around, everyone was smiling, laughing, having a great time, and it just felt like we expanded our group of geek friends, our geek circle, you know? It was like, yeah, this is what I wanted to do when I started this group, and look at it, it's happening, you know? So that made me extremely happy, and I can't, like, oh, man. Wes Hofer, Jeff Campbell, Jeff Pope, the costumers I mentioned before, Jawhar, John Okomi, he was out there. Graciela Rodriguez, Mike Kruger, Fanboy Headquarters, Gio Braun the Fourth, Symantec, GMI Games, Adventures Guild of Riverside, Hollywood Collectibles, Hollywood Cinema Collectibles, and just everybody that showed up. You know, thank you so much for coming out there. It made me smile. I'm still smiling when I think about it, and I get goosebumpies. And I can't, like, this is a shameful moment, guys. I'm going to let you all get in a little personal on the AJ space here, okay? I came home, like, for some reason, every time everybody said, hey, man, this is great, great job, whatever, I felt like a little bit of tears in the background. And I was good all day, held it back. I called my mom when I got home. I'm like, Mom, look what happened, blah, 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 blah. And, like, cried like a baby. I don't know why. I don't know what it was in me, but I was just, like, so happy that the stress was gone. Happy that it went so well. Happy that everybody just had a great time. And yeah, so September 4th is the next one. Please, please, please come on out. We'll have more costume contests. We'll have a lot more fun. No Super Bowl going on, so you won't have any excuse of why you can't show up.
Right.
So, it'll be awesome, I promise.
Well, it sounds like it was a complete success.
As far as like we're concerned, it was, you know. I mean, maybe not to a lot of different people, maybe not to the bigger cons, but to me, it was. You know what was also a good goosebumpy geek out moment? I heard people walk around going, this is like mini con, you know, like a mini Comic Con.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was like, I had Forbidden Panel people running up to me saying, dude, this guy just called it like a mini Comic Con. Like, you know, we were all geeking out and saying, like, hee hee, you know.
Right.
It was really cool. It was an awesome experience.
Okay, well, why don't we take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
Crashing through the sky comes a fearful cry. Cobra! 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 Armies of the night.
Do you have dreams of world domination? You ever wanted to take on those pesky G.I. Joe jerk-offs, but really didn't know how to do that? Visit www.cobrathirdnightwatch.com. This is Major Boca of Cobra asking you, telling you, to go to www.cobrathirdnightwatch.com. That's Cobra3RDNightwatch.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the final segment of Episode 77 of the Panelcast. Brian, what do you want to say before we go?
I don't really want to say anything, but I'm getting paid to do it, so I may as well.
Wait. You're getting paid?
Oh, you didn't know? Yeah, sorry about that. I guess I wasn't really supposed to tell you.
Bastard.
Well, anyway, the first thing I wanted to mention is that I've got a new Geek Girls episode done, finally. So I got it edited and sent that over. Should be up sometime relatively soon.
Probably tonight.
I also want to invite everybody to check out some of our new websites that we've got. We've got www.adaminswatching.com, which is going to be the site of our new webcomic Security that's coming out. Right now, it's just like a placeholder page, but go ahead and visit it, bookmark it, and be prepared for some awesome coming up. Then, of course, we want everybody to go over to www.iecomicexpo.com for all your news on the Inland Empire Comic Expo. This is another important thing. The original Forbidden Panel website is eventually going to be sort of transferring over. We're in the process right now of sort of dividing everything up, making the sites more user-friendly. You probably have already noticed that with the things like the Panelcast site. And we've got a few other sites that are going up. We're just trying to separate things to make it easier to find. And the original Forbidden Panel site is going to essentially become a forum, which is what we had intended for it to be in the first place. And then all this other stuff kind of started getting stuck on there. So it's going to be become just a forum site. And then all of the other content will be getting moved to their own individual sites. So be on the lookout for some new changes coming up. And just be aware that some of the content from the original Forbidden Panel site is going to be disappearing as it gets moved over to the appropriate site.
Actually, more and more, we're going to be just factoring out the original forum site altogether and adding a different forum onto the new Panelcast website. So change your bookmarks and get everything set up for that.
Well, if there are Do you have any other announcements or anything that's coming up in terms of Forbidden Panel?
No, no. Just keep an eye out for the new security webcomic coming up, like Brian had mentioned. And also, Brian is steadily working on inking a new comic book called Black Friday, which is being written by our new writer, Cricket, and drawn by her fiancé, Cameron. That should be coming out here soon as Brian gets off his lazy ass to do it.
Yeah, I'm not getting paid enough for that.
But you're still getting paid something. Other than that, if you have any questions or comments or feedback, please either leave it on the on the website itself or contact us, aj@forbiddenpanel.com or brian@forbiddenpanel.com, as well as panelcast@forbiddenpanel.com. We like creating all kinds of cool email addresses, so yeah. But no, I think that's about it, Brian.
All right, well then, why don't we go ahead and close out episode 77 of the Panelcast.
See you guys next time.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.